Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You ever wonder why women tend to outlive men? This fact has been consistent from as far back as the 1800s in human history, at least. Lifestyle factors play a role in this life expectancy gap, but even with our non-smoking, non-drinking, closest living genetic relatives, primates such as chimpanzees and gibbons, females outlive males. My next guest says this disparity between the lifespans of men and women can be explained at least somewhat by evolutionary biology. So joining me now is Richard Bybiscus, professor of anthropology and ecology and evolutionary biology at Yale. In his new book, How Men Age, What Evolution Reveals About Male Health and Mortality, he examines the gender gap in life expectancy as well as other staples of the aging process in men through the lens of evolution. Professor, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
So just on that, you know, very basic question of life expectancy, how does evolutionary biology explain it?
Well, I think it's important to understand that as evolutionary biologists, you know, we look at organisms, including humans, from a Darwinian perspective. And basically that means that evolution doesn't necessarily, or natural selection, that is, doesn't necessarily select for health or things that will extend your longevity. Evolution basically explains how all organisms, including humans, maximize their reproductive success. So in many ways, we are evolved to optimize our reproduction, not necessarily have long lives. So in the case of sex differences, sometimes those benefits of reproduction, will come at a cost of longevity. And that seems to be the case in the sex differences we see in humans and other organisms.
So, for example, you write that even physical traits that are looked at negatively in the aging process of men have facilitated the emergence of positive traits. What are some of those negative physical traits? I mean, like male pattern baldness?
Yeah. I mean, for example, male pattern baldness is sort of it seems to be just an inevitable aspect of aging. So if you're a male and you have testosterone swimming through your system, some of that testosterone makes it to your scalp. And that testosterone over time, over a lifespan, will be converted to other forms of androgens and will cause your hair to fall out in some men, not all men. So that seems to be just an aspect of time. But other aspects of negativity include things like exposure to testosterone over a lifetime. Early on in life, it's great for putting on muscle and keeping your sex drive alive. But later on, it could actually have negative effects. And in evolutionary biology, we call that antagonistic pleiotropy. Basically, things that are good for you early in life may have detrimental effects later on in life.
So some of the other changes that males face as they age, you write about, can also be explained to some degree by our evolutionary past. Prostate disease, loss of muscle tone you just mentioned, decreases in testosterone, increases in fat, erectile dysfunction. Does it all come down to testosterone and that males evolve to have a lot of testosterone to accomplish things in the survival of species that they needed to accomplish earlier in life?
Yeah, well, I think in basically all organisms, hormones in general, especially sex hormones, are these really interesting aspects of biology that control, or I should say, have an impact on everything from reproduction to behavior to immunofunction to growth. So for any organism, hormones, sex steroids are really important. And so for men, testosterone is sort of the primary hormone that is sort of one of the key players in all these aspects. It's responsible for organizational aspects of your biology in terms of why many men look, or most men look, different than women, how they're a little bit larger, have facial hair and more muscle. And so as time goes on, that testosterone tends to go down in most populations, some populations, not all, interestingly enough. So, yes, the role of testosterone is, and other androgens, are key to understanding a lot of aspects of male aging. It's not the only thing, but it's a really important player.
Listeners, any questions for our guest, Richard Brybiskas, evolutionary biology professor at Yale, author now of How Men Age, What Evolution Reveals About Male Health and Mortality, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So on a practical basis, can the principles of evolutionary biology help in devising treatments for diseases that affect men, such as prostate cancer?
Well, I'm not sure about treatments, but I think it does help us understand where it comes from. So, for example, there isn't a sort of an equal distribution of prostate cancer risk across the globe. Some populations have higher rates of prostate cancer than others. We're not really sure why that is. It's probably there's evidence for genetic factors, evidence for environmental and lifestyle and dietary factors. I think it's a good educated guess to say that there are gene-environment interactions that contribute to variation in prostate cancer levels. And what we tend to see is an aspect of evolutionary biology where we see genetic factors interact with environmental factors. So not sure if evolutionary theory will provide any answers or new drugs. But what it can do is help us explain why some people are at higher risk than others.
You mentioned evolutionary factors interacting with environmental factors. I see you're also an anthropologist as well as an evolutionary biologist. So what about evolutionary factors intersecting with cultural factors? Do you see that? And does it wind up with some male populations having longer life expectancies or healthier old ages than others?
Yes, that's actually a great question. So I have to put a plug in for a colleague of mine in Poland, Grażyna Jasienska, who did this wonderful study looking at the effects of parenthood on longevity. And what she found was that, and this is sort of another topic, but women's lifespan tended to go down with the more children they have. But fathers tended to have longer lifespans when they had more daughters, not more sons, but more daughters. And what seems to happen is that it's a really interesting case of where culture interacts with biology, in that the daughters in that particular society would stick around, help dad take care of him, and that seemed to contribute to him, those fathers having longer lifespans. So there are really interesting aspects where biology and culture inform each other and actually co-vary.
Really interesting. That was so interesting. Do you have another one?
Oh, goodness. Let's see.
Don't mean to put you on the spot. okay, I do mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
But if you don't, I'll take a call. All right, let's talk to David in Brooklyn. If you think of another one, we can come back to that. David, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually a Chinese martial arts teacher born and raised here in America, and sort of fiction meets culture meets sort of fantasy, but there is a very strong idea in Chinese martial arts that a man should retain his semen or just abstain completely. But if not, then there should be some sort of abstination, holding back, retention. And I was just wondering if the professor has any background of this Chinese cultural phenomenon. And also in Roman literature in ancient Latin, they did say that if you retain semen, it would become poison. I don't know the exact Latin, but it was semen retentum becomes venom, or something like that. So I just wanted to throw those cultural little tidbits out
You're saying in fancy language, don't have sex and you'll live longer?
Well, you're born with a certain amount. Well, basically, it's kind of described as your semen is sort of made by your body, and the testicles are working really hard. So if you blow it all, so to speak, you'll lose your hair and lose your teeth. And they kind of tie that into, in Chinese medicine, has to do with the spleen, which is not actually the physical spleen, but it's more of an idea of this concept of the spleen, which is involved in holding up and holding up your energy and not letting things fall, such as hernias, which they don't believe is an injury. They believe it's a sort of a similar effect of aging and just depleting, so-called burning the candle at both ends. So,
David, thank you very much. Well, anything on that? I don't know if that's in your bailiwick, Professor.
I think that's a little bit outside of my bailiwick. But it does lead to some other interesting issues, such as, you know, how sex, you know, may contribute to variation in longevity. So, for example, in evolutionary biology, there's a very clear idea about how the more energy and time you spend in reproductive effort, you know, sort of building tissue, for example, that may attract mates, or spending more time looking for mates as opposed to taking care of yourself and being vigilant for predators and things, that can seems to compromise your lifespan. We see this in a lot of non-human animals. In humans, it's a little bit unclear. I'm not familiar with some of the things that the caller talked about. I've certainly heard of them, but it's, like you said, outside my bailiwick. But there's some interesting aspects of historical aspects of eunuchs who have no testosterone. And there's a lot of there's been a few studies looking at whether or not they have longer lifespans, or if there's any difference in sort of intact males versus those who have been castrated. And as science tends to be, the answer is an absolute maybe. One study looking at Chinese eunuchs or Korean eunuchs, I believe, found an effect. Another looking at some eunuchs, I believe, in Turkey. And so we really don't know. I mean, humans are incredibly complex animals, which is the reason why I think as a biological anthropologist and sort of the example I gave in Poland, it's really important and interesting to sort of be aware of both the cultural, environmental, and biological aspects, because they're all going to play into this story.
Well, he talks about depleting your semen. I always thought it was a renewable resource, but I guess that's another show.
It is.
Richard Brybisk is our guest for another few minutes from Yale. His book, How Men Age, What Evolution Reveals About Male Health and Mortality. And Michael in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hello. I'm also known as Mr. Cam from New Rochelle, but since I broke through today, I'm happy about that.
Sure.
I have heard that Japanese men live almost as long as Japanese women, something like a few months difference, whereas here I think it's something like 4 years. I have heard that they get a lot of respect when they're older. There's no financial insecurity, so they don't have to worry about the stock market or losing their assets and so on, and getting isolated from people and being in a competitive financial environment. So that seems to help. And maybe there's a cultural difference here and why we have these big differences in this country.
You familiar with that, Professor?
I am. And it sounds like he read one chapter in my book, because actually we did some research in Japan. And a couple of things. One is, there's variation between populations in terms of the differences in lifespan between men and women. But even in Japan, the lifespan of men and women, you know, women tend to outlive the men, but the gap is a little bit more narrow. And this actually is a great segue into another example of how culture sort of interfaces with biology. A few years ago, about 10 years ago, we did a study in Japan looking at testosterone levels and changes in testosterone in older men, because in the United States, there's a lot of studies looking at changes in testosterone, but given other research that I've done and other people have done, there's pretty clear evidence that what happens in the U.S. may not apply in other populations. So we went to Japan and looked at testosterone levels in these older men, and what we found was that these older men, they were about in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, some even 90 and 100, had testosterone levels that were not as low as you would expect. So what we found is their testosterone levels peaked, because this was a cross-sectional study, around their 20s, early 30s, just like here in the United States. And then they started to decline. But then an interesting thing happened around the age of 40, and that is they sort of plateaued. And there really was no difference between men in their 40s, 50s, and 60s in their testosterone levels compared to those who were in their 70s, 80s, and even 90s. And we found this really interesting, because this was obviously a different pattern than what we see in the U.S. And anecdotally, what we found, which was right spot on with what the caller is mentioning, is that all these men were coming in. This was sort of a communal health project. We were just one component. And what we found is that the men were coming in, being doted upon, you know, by family and sons and daughters, and they were just surrounded by a cloud of friends and family who really cared about them. And what we realized, what this was sort of a self-selected study, is because the men who were home alone, maybe probably bedridden, didn't participate in the study because they couldn't make it to the community center. And so we sort of kept this idea on the back burner, how social support, friends, family, feeling wanted, not only contributes to your overall health, but contributes to that aspect of your health that's related to testosterone. So I think the caller is absolutely spot on and correct that, you know, how socially engaged you are with friends and family is really important for all aspects of your health, including your reproductive health.
So simply that Japan-U.S. comparison might be attributable to the fact that that's a much more communal society than this?
It might be. It might be. You know, I don't want to make blanket statements, but because there's a lot of variation here in the U.S. We have a very heterogeneous population here in the U.S., but in Japan, there is certainly a very significant emphasis on taking care of the elderly and making them feel engaged and included in society.
All right. Let's take one more call. Larry in Bayside, you're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Brian. I was wondering if your guest had looked into any of the research about trying to find a regimen for hormone replacement therapy for men to maintain testosterone levels and estrogen levels and all of the other associated hormones.
You're looking into that for possible personal use?
I am, yes. I'd like to live to 200 or 300 and manage to stay vital during that period. But I understood that much of the aging effects that we're looking at are basically a drop-off of the testosterone levels and a loss of the estrogen levels. And if we could manage to find the right combination and not mess up the system while replacing them, we could expand the lifespan of people who are vital and not just reaching 120, with the last 40 years being pretty much of a mess.
So does your review of evolutionary biology suggest that that kind of hormone replacement therapy could make us live to 200?
I hate to disappoint the caller, but probably not. One of the things that we know, and this is not my research, but it's research that's in the clinical literature, that there are trade-offs. You can sort of think of testosterone just like any other controlled substance, in that, even if it's endogenous, in that there are going to be side effects, and some of those side effects are unwanted. So, for example, a recent study came out that, well, first of all, I should mention that there's a lot of compelling research to show that if you're older and you take testosterone, you will lose fat and you will gain muscle and you'll feel better. But it does come with a cost. So in this one particular study, men who were taking testosterone supplements after the age of 60, especially if they had previous heart problems, were much more likely to have a heart attack within 6 months of starting testosterone supplementation. And so what seems to be happening is, again, this aspect of aging, that not all aspects of your aging process or your aging biology sort of ages uniformly. So if you take testosterone and you build muscle and do other things, you may end up taxing other aspects of your biology that can't handle the effects of testosterone. So I think the most important thing is that if men are considering any type of testosterone supplementation or replacement, that they really think about it carefully and they really sort of look at this as a holistic health issue, because there are likely side effects that they should be aware
of. Well, as with so many other things, the magic pill doesn't seem to be out there.
Exactly.
I want to thank, and tell me if I'm going to finally say your name right. I think I've been mangling it through the whole conversation. Is it Richard Bribiescus?
That's very close. It's Richard Bribiescus.
All right. And so for anybody who might be looking for your book, his last name is spelled Bribiescas. Or you could just look for the title of the book, How Men Age, What Evolution Reveals About Male Health and Mortality. Really interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.